It's the Rob Carson Show. Are you ready to be pod smacked? Now, here's Rob Carson.
Welcome to episode number 162 of the podcast. Glad to have you with me, guys. Greatly appreciate it. Of course, it's available on iHeartRadio, on iTunes, on a whole bunch of other sites, and Amazon Alexa. Thank you very much. Just say Rob Carson Show podcast. A ton of stuff to get to. Lots of audio. Some serious, some not so serious. Want to thank Dr. Alex Nelson, chiropractor in the Kansas City area, for being a sponsor of the radio program, FountainOfLifeCairo.com. FountainOfLifeCairo.com. I'm going to go see him next week and have my neck looked at. I've got a disc pain in my upper spine, lower neck that's so bad, my skin hurts. I'm not kidding. It's that bad. The skin actually hurts. And every time I move my head, it makes noise. It's not good. But I know that chiropractic will work, so I'm going to go see Dr. Alex Nelson because he's a great guy. 8335 North Congress Avenue, Kansas City. Here's his number, 816-741-4711, 816-741-4711. FountainOfLifeChiro.com. That's all you got to remember. So yesterday, the president began what is considered to be a paring down of DACA. It's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. There's a few reasons for this. President Obama did it illegally. That's just the way it was. It was unconstitutional the way he did it because his DREAM Act didn't pass. So he just decided to do what wasn't even an action. It wasn't a presidential election. It wasn't an executive order. It was actually a memo. And it caused the streaming over the border of about 400,000 illegal kids, putting them at a good deal of danger. Here's a little bit from Attorney General Jeff Sessions about it.
In other words, the executive branch, through DACA, deliberately sought to achieve what the legislative branch specifically refused to authorize on multiple occasions. Such an open-ended circumvention of immigration laws was an unconstitutional exercise of authority by the executive branch.
Okay. Now, that was one of the main reasons why. All right. And this isn't about throwing kids out of the country. That's not going to happen. All right. That is not going to happen. I had a bad feeling about DACA years ago because Dr. Evil actually supported it. Yeah. When I saw that in the first Austin Powers movie and I remembered it, I went, uh-oh, this is going to be bad. So a lot of people, Democrats, are yelling at Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump saying they're racist and they want to kick kids out and separate families and all this stuff. And oddly enough, in 2009, Chuck Schumer was speaking at the Immigration Law and Policy Conference at Georgetown Law School and had a few different things. I would say maybe a little bit more of a hardliner on immigration than he is today.
Illegal immigration is wrong. And a primary goal of comprehensive immigration reform must be to dramatically curtail future illegal immigration.
Now, the DACA recipients and their parents are illegals. That's just I'm not taking a political tack on this, but they're here illegally.
Second, operational control of our borders through significant additional increases in infrastructure.
Whoa! Isn't that like building a wall?
Technology and border personnel.
Drones.
Must be achieved within a year of enactment. Third, a biometric-based employer verification system with tough enforcement and auditing is necessary to significantly diminish the job magnet that attracts illegal aliens to the United States.
Now, a lot of Democrats are saying that this is going to kick a lot of these kids out of the workforce. Well, right there, he's saying that they should have never been a part of it. Here's a little bit from Chuck Schumer just 8 years ago.
Family reunification is a cornerstone value of our immigration system. By dramatically reducing illegal immigration, we can create more room for both family immigration and employer-based immigration. Six, we must encourage the world's best and brightest individuals to come to the United States and create the new technologies and businesses that will employ countless American workers, but must discourage businesses from using our immigration laws as means to obtain temporary and less expensive foreign labor to replace capable American workers.
Which is what this program did. This is what the HB1 visa program is doing. It's bringing in people from around the country to undercut American workers. And it's worked beautifully, by the way.
And finally, seven, We must create a system that converts the current flow of primarily low-skilled illegal immigrants into the United States into a more manageable and controlled flow of legal immigrants who can be absorbed by our economy.
Wow, how things change. You know, I don't care what your politics are. Hypocrisy is hypocrisy, and that is about as hypocritical as I could possibly imagine. One more political story here. Rahm Emanuel has decided to make Chicago classrooms Trump-free zones altogether. This is, I think, pretty ridiculous, actually. Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel on Tuesday assured incoming high schoolers they need not to worry about President Trump ending the Dreamers program, saying that Chicago schools are a Trump-free sanctuary for young illegal immigrants. Totally politicizing this. To all the Dreamers that are here in this room in the city of Chicago, you are welcome in the city of Chicago. This is your home. You have nothing to worry about, blah, 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 blah. Except for being shot. I guess being shot is probably a big deal. Pretty much, yeah. I think your chances of being shot are much higher than being deported. Chicago, our schools, our neighborhoods, our city, as it relates to what Mr. Trump said, will be a Trump-free zone, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So that's what's going on nationally. 6 months to work on it, and it isn't going to result in a lot of people being kicked out of the country. Okay. So I'm going to get some monument removal here in a few, because that's a big story. Also, I got a really cool story of one of the most selfless people you could possibly imagine, rescuing people from the zone of damage with Hurricane Harvey. A police officer who was terminally ill, spending his last days saving people. Really amazing story. So you heard about Alex Wubble. She's this nurse at a hospital, University of Salt Lake City Hospital or what. Anyways, a hospital in Salt Lake City, and a police officer arrived, and there was a patient there on a gurney, passed out because he had been hit in his truck by a car escaping the police. Officer said, "Hey, I need blood drawn from that patient." Nurse said no. She appeared on the Today Show. We've got a couple cuts from this.
We're done. You're under arrest.
It was a violent confrontation. Hospital surveillance and police body camera videos, which may have been edited, show a Salt Lake City police officer arresting a nurse in July. Alex Wubbles says Detective Jeff Payne demanded a blood sample from her unconscious patient, a truck driver involved in a fiery crash with a car that was fleeing police.
This is something that you guys agreed to with this hospital.
Wubbles objects, citing hospital policy that a patient's blood cannot be drawn unless he or she gives consent,
yes,
has a warrant out for his or her arrest, or is under arrest.
So anyway, she was placed in custody for a few minutes, not too long. But it was a pretty brutal incident, actually. And she was buttoned up, and she knew exactly what she was talking about, is what is allowed by law and what is the policy agreed to by the police department and the hospital. Now, she was asked about whether the police officer being placed on administrative leave is enough punishment.
The detective and another officer, they're on paid administrative leave right now. Is that enough for you?
I can't say that. I'm not Chief Payne, or I'm not even Chief Brown. But I'm not here to police the police. The police need to do that.
Okay, that's well said, actually. And it's true. And maybe this was a thought-provoking. Maybe this is a conversation that needed to happen. She was asked about the reaction she's gotten from people around the country, too.
At first, it was maybe overwhelming as an understatement. Yeah. But just the gratitude I have and for the support by my colleagues as nurses around the country and around the world, and just healthcare providers in general, has been amazing. And then just society, I think this resonates with people all over, and that's a really unfortunate problem that we have to fix. And I strongly believe that with effective communication and better dialogue between our two agencies, that we can potentially make this better.
I just couldn't believe that. The police officer, I wouldn't want to be a police officer. God bless police officers. This guy was apparently not informed about this. Of all the things you need to learn, there are many things you need to know, obviously, as a police officer. I guess right up there with, how to arrest somebody, you know, that knowing when it's appropriate to get a blood sample for an alcohol or drug test might be part of it. There's one more cut from the nurse talking about it.
I have no idea. I personally didn't think there was any sense of urgency. I would have liked...
She's talking about why the deputy reacted the way he did.
For a chance for him to sort of talk with one of his superiors prior to doing what he did to me. I don't know what his problem was, if you will.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a bad day. I saw it, and she explained to him very clearly, I can't allow you to take blood from an unconscious person unless they give you consent while they're awake. And even then, you can deny a blood sample, all right? And I'll just say this real quick, because when it comes to suspicion of DUI, there was a court case that just decided that if you refuse a blood sample, that does not mean automatically you are assumed to be guilty. However, in many states, if you refuse a breathalyzer, you're automatically guilty. That's just the way it is. And it's kind of interesting because both involve something that comes out of your body. I don't know. So I'm sure she's going to get a big old lawsuit out of this. She's going to get a really, really big old lawsuit out of this. Lots of stories about political correctness, things being removed in Charlottesville. They've decided to remove a statue of Stonewall Jackson. There was a Charlottesville council meeting, I guess, last night. Here's what it sounded like.
I'm going to call it recess.
Now, there was a woman who was there to speak, and she used her time, apparently, and the city council president said, no, you've used your time, and, of course, the mob in there threw a temper tantrum.
I've called a recess. We're going to take a recess. We'll start back up again.
Yeah, these people need a recess because they act like children.
Can we all stay here? Mm-hmm. Everybody will have a chance to speak. Ms. Walker gave away her time and used the last of it. You gave away your time, but that's your prerogative, but it's gone.
So what I'm asking you is if somebody wants to share, you're saying that they can't do that.
We're not going to do that tonight. We did that at the last meeting.
So anyway, they canceled the meeting, delayed it, and then they did a vote in private because some people just can't be civil. And they're going to be taking down the statue of Stonewall Jackson. And there are a lot of statues being taken down around the country. And I heard the other day, Nathan Bedford Forrest, there were a lot of streets and stuff named after him. You know what he is? He's the founder of the KKK, Democrat. yeah, that should come down. Why was that person? Or the man who wrote the Dred Scott decision and the statue that was out in front of the Maryland State House. I saw that the other day. No. That guy shouldn't be honored. I don't know if you knew this. Robert Lee, I guess this is the ninth or fourth or whatever, and he was a great, 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 great nephew of Robert E. Lee, was given a speaking role at the MTV Music Awards. All right, so this guy's a young guy. He happened to be a pastor as well. Well, he's out of a job. I'll explain that in a second. He had a couple of things to say. Because he's obviously ashamed of his past, of his bloodline, and more importantly, in support of some very radical politics.
My name is Robert Lee IV. I'm a descendant of Robert E. Lee, the Civil War general whose statue was at the center of violence in Charlottesville. We have made my ancestor an idol of white supremacy, racism, and hate. As a pastor, it is my moral duty to speak out against racism, America's original sin.
There he goes. He's allowing a flogging of himself. He's a self-loather. He's saying exactly what the crowd wants to hear. You are privileged. You are white. Even though your ancestors lived, 150 years ago, you still have something to be... You should be held responsible. Then he went on to praise a radical group and a very couple of radical gatherings.
Today, I call on all of us with privilege and power to answer God's
call. This is mindless faculty lounge mental masturbation here.
Front racism and white supremacy head on.
Yeah, we've been doing that for a very long time. Somebody just decided to make it sound like it was 1968 all over again. And it's not. It hasn't been. Let's say what the crowd likes. Come on.
We can find inspiration in the Black Lives Matter movement,
which is a terrorist organization, which throws urine bottles at police officers, which says F the police, pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, have been essentially responsible for inciting a mob that has resulted in more police assassinations than we've seen in years.
The women who marched in the Women's March in January,
which was a vile, vulgar, anti-Trump, pro-abortion march. It was there were pro-life groups that were actually excluded from the march. One of the speakers, convicted terrorist, and then there was Ashley Judd with her P-word poem.
Heather Heyer, who died fighting for her beliefs in Charlottesville.
So anyway, he was asked to resign. Some members of the congregation not receptive following the national attention the church received. Lee tweeted Sunday morning, had to resign his pastorate, wants his followers to pray for him. But with my appearance on MTV's media's focus on my church, reached an all-time high. A faction of church members was concerned about my speech and that I lifted up Black Lives Matter. Yep, the Women's March. Yep, pro-abortion, pro-death march. And Heather Meyer as examples of racial justice work. No, they weren't. I want to stress that there were many in the congregation who supported my right to free speech, yet were uncomfortable with the intention the church was receiving. The church's reaction was deeply hurtful to me. Yeah, you know what? Sorry. you're going to support radical, violent, anti-life, leftist, socialist, communist groups? I would have asked you to be removed from the pulpit. Sorry. It's the way I am, man. It's the way I am. Here's another thing. Now this is like future crime. listen to this. North Carolina High School has decided to take down a piece of artwork featuring former U.S. President Abraham Lincoln and Confederate President Jefferson Davis to potentially stop offending people. All right. In the light of recent controversy in Charlottesville, Virginia, and throughout the country, we have recently removed the painting from the wall outside the media center, according to the principal, Billy Berry. While we have received no concerns or complaints about the artwork, we felt that it was best to be proactive and remove the painting to avoid potentially offending anybody. That's just the antithesis of free speech, don't you think? Don't you find this a little bit frightening? The artwork was in no way designed to promote the Confederacy. It was simply a historical representation of the President of the United States and the Confederacy during the Civil War, which you can't deny. The piece of art was created by using 2-inch squares, half painted by Camden students and another half created digitally by Pittsburgh students. The students communicated daily with one another using Skype while working on the project. Upon completion, the students mailed half of the painted squares to Pittsburgh, and the students in Pittsburgh mailed half of the digital squares to Camden. Each school then pieced together the squares, and the artwork was displayed in both schools. So there you go. You got kids who've never experienced racism, kids who don't promote racism, and now they are being thrust into feeling guilty about something that deserves no guilt. Does not deserve any guilt. San Diego State is offering a class to educated student body on the proper way to verbally address microaggressions in order to reduce an attempt to eliminate the racist, classist, sexist, heterosexist, ableists, I don't know what the hell that is, and privileged attitudes on our campus. This is San Diego State. Don't send your children there. The class, Foundations of Cultural Competency, that's funny, in a changing world, will teach students specific vocabulary in order to effectively communicate with the diverse campus student body. Now, this is what they're doing with monuments, but they're doing it with words. They've been doing it for a very long time. Course description, you ready for this? This is, it's going to, you're going to want to, you're going to want to put a bike helmet on to keep your head from exploding. Cultural, culture, cultural diversity, and multiculturalism constitute some of the most significant societal issues in America today. Oriented around the core concept of culture and cultural groups, this course is designed to introduce the participant to the basic concepts of culture and cultural diversity. How many times can we use the word culture? Oh, man. Microaggression is effectively a low-level, sometimes passive-aggressive treatments of marginalized or specifically targeted group of people. It was first coined in 1970. All right? According to Stanford University professor Rush Starkman, it's a microaggression to tell others that your college workload is easy because you wouldn't say to your dearest buddy or sibling who was visibly struggling, oh, it was easy. That's one thing. You also can't tell somebody who is from a foreign country, has a thick accent, you can't say you speak English well. You can't say to someone who's a black person who has a fro or cornrows, you can't say, where did you get your hair done? Those are all microaggressions, by the way. Thought you should know. Here's a story. A woman running for mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina, was harshly criticized for suggesting that her being white was a reason to support her candidacy. Kimberly Page Barnett is a long-shot candidate for the Republican Party nomination. She said, vote for me, Kimberly Page Barnett, mayor of Charlotte 2017. Underneath that introduction, read the line, Republican, smart, and white traditional. Fierce backlash led Barnett to delete the description on social media, but it remained active. I wouldn't have done that. I don't think voting, being white, you know, it shouldn't be a reason to vote for somebody. Although, and you know, you're going to hate to say this, but there were a lot of people who voted for Barack Obama because he was black. I understand that it was historical. When you hear Michelle Obama say she's a proud black woman, you know, but you can't say it if you're white. She wrote, other people judge me. What's the difference? I say I'm white. Others describe themselves as examples of transgenders. Are they labeling themselves? I'm also a divorced mother of two adult children. I accept others as who they are. I have traditional conservative views when it comes to family and friendships. Well, you know, there are words that are allowed and there are descriptions that are allowed, and you just happen to be on the wrong end of the stick there, sunshine. Okay. Shall we talk about Dennis Rodman and his relationship with Kim Jong-un, the dictator of North Korea who... They just tested a hydrogen bomb. They are threatening the United States. They fired a missile over Japan, among other things. And Dennis Rodman is so clueless, and he doesn't even care. No, not even at all. Doesn't care a bit, because they're buddies. They're buddies. They're buddies. Now I'm going to get to what Dennis says they like to do together, him and Kim Jong-un. But, you know, on a serious note, Dennis Rodman, we've always known as a sick individual. He's a messed up freak show. He is a attention hound. Right now he is hanging out with a third generation dictator who murders people. Uses artillery rounds to assassinate people, to execute people. This regime for the last three rounds of it, the grandfather, the father, and this guy, they sentence entire families, generations in work camps, and they die there. Dennis Rodman is too stupid to be ashamed of this, though. He's too stupid to realize that bedding down with Hitler or bedding down with Stalin or Mao is wrong. And so Dennis Rodman, I don't laugh at this guy. I think he's an a-hole, and I think he ought to go live in North Korea, to be quite honest, and become a North Korean citizen and see what's happening. But he appeared on Piers Morgan's, it's like Good Morning Britain. It's like the show's here. But he appeared there, and here's what he said about he and Kim Jong-un as friends, what they like to do.
All the time, we laugh. We sing karaoke. We do a lot of cool things together. And we ride horses. We hang out. We go skiing. And we hardly ever talk politics. And that's the good thing about that.
Yeah, but I mean, this is quite extraordinary that you go skiing and riding and you do when you do karaoke with Chick Kim Jong-un, what songs does he do?
No, it's just funny the fact that, you know, me saying something like that and people say, oh, my God, Dennis Rodman protecting, you know, the marshal of North Korea.
Who the hell cares what song they sing? This isn't cute, Piers. This isn't cute and this isn't funny. And, a lot of people be giggling. They go skiing. It's not funny. It's really sick. It's really sick. Then I guess later in the interview, Piers Morgan was actually begging him to take him to North Korea to visit the Supreme Leader. Why? Why would you want to do that? Honestly. Wow. This is an inspirational story. There have been a lot of stories coming out of Houston that are really, really remarkable. And this one got to me. This is a police officer who has terminal cancer. And rather than staying in a hospital, staying at home, he's rescuing hundreds and hundreds of people. This is out of Channel 8 in Houston.
I just want to be treated normal, just, you know, like any other officer. I don't want no special treatment.
As a traffic cop, he even drives an almost undercover car. But colleagues told us that Hurricane Harvey might have been his finest hour.
My name is Sergeant Epi Garza. On the days of the storm of Harvey, Officer Norbert Ramon was assigned to my unit.
Officer Ramon spent 3 days during the storm, helping rescue more than 1,500 Houstonians.
God, you've never seen so much water before.
From neighborhoods northeast, along with those homes in Kingwood.
And that's probably one of the best times he's probably had since his diagnosis.
His diagnosis.
I'm diagnosed with stage 4. Colon cancer, which has spread to my liver and my lungs.
That was 18 months ago. At the time, doctors thought he might have 6 to 8 years left.
Has that changed at all since that initial diagnosis?
I don't ask that anymore. You know, I just go with the...
Do you not want to know?
No, I really don't. You know, I really don't.
Why not?
We all got to go sometime, but, you know, I don't want to have a time stamp on me, you know.
After 3 days on the rescue boat, he drove to Tulsa for chemotherapy.
I worry about my wife, you know. She takes it hard, and when she takes it hard, then I break down.
Officer Ramon doesn't dwell on it and isn't looking for sympathy. But he is a clear example of courage in this city. A cop with cancer, saving lives while losing his own.
Amazing. Sorry, that got to me a little. Amazing man. Pray for him. Pray for him. So there's a photo. I posted it on my Facebook page. Showing the empty shelves in Houston with the exception of one section of refrigerated foods at a grocery store. And it's all vegan meat substitutes. It seems that when people are facing starvation or eating vegan meat, they chose starving. Check out my Facebook page at Rob Carson Show. It's just, oh, man. Yeah, vegan food is just, come on, man. If you're a vegan, you got an eating disorder. Here's a funny story. These are the most common how-to questions that we Google. You ready for this? Number 10 is how to gain weight. Number 9, how to pick a lock. Number 8, how to draw a dog. Really? All right? You want to draw your dog? You take a picture. How to solve a Rubik's Cube. I can see that. The guy just did it the other day. He's 15 years old, under 5 seconds. How to change your name. How to get a girlfriend. Lonely people on the web. How to love. What? How to kiss. How to make scrambled eggs is number 2. And speaking of number 2, number 1 is how to fix a toilet. The things that we search for online. I did how to get your dishwasher to work the other day. Clean out the filter. I found 6 toothpicks, a twist tie bread wrapper, a piece of coral, a rock, and a few bones. It's working beautifully now. All right, time for me to get out of here, guys. I greatly appreciate you joining me. I want to thank our sponsor, Dr. Alex Nelson, fountainoflifecairo.com. Fountainoflifecairo.com. He does terrific work on Congress Avenue. in Kansas City, 816-741-4711. If you'd like to help me out on Patreon, patreon.com, you can give me $1 or $5 or $10 a month for doing this show. It would be greatly appreciated. In the meantime, you can download this show on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and on your Amazon Alexa. All you got to do is say, or type in, The Rob Carson Show Podcast. God bless, guys. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to The Rob Carson Show. Friend him on Facebook at Carson Show, on Twitter at Rob Carson, and on Instagram, I think Facebook and Twitter are enough for now. We'll see you soon.